And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Change can be difficult. There's so many issues on the table right now, it's hard to know the right thing to do. But new alliances are forming for a better Earth that might surprise you. It takes all kinds to change the world, but guess what? It's happening. It's great. We're about to head into the forest of decisions and decision makers who make it all more possible when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Welcome. The Wildside News is in orbit around the world and may soon be on the satellites for a syndication to a radio station near you. Thanks for listening. Listen, we've got a great show today. This is really an exciting show. It's about the challenge of change. You know, everything is changing. Spring is turning to summer. The poles are changing. This is a show about change. We start out with a visit to our National Park of the Week, the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore along Lake Superior. This 70,000-acre park compares with Yellowstone in its diversity. Then in our second segment, the Wildside News will be part of the announcement of a major landmark in the changing relationship between the environmental and corporate world. This past week, the Bank of America has announced its commitment to lead the financial world in environmental policies that will help to create sustainable forest policies around the world. We'll be talking with two of the people responsible for bringing this about, one from the Bank of America and the other from the Rainforest Action Network, known as RAN. In our last segment, we'll see how changing strategies in the forest products industries are helping to eliminate cutting of old-growth forests, protection of the rainforests, and safeguard the cultural uniqueness around the world, and how you can make a real difference so easily. This is important news for all of us to know about. So let's get started with another adventure here on the Wildside News. Let's see what's happening in the news today. The new blockbuster movie, The Day After Tomorrow, will hit the planet tomorrow. Produced by the same people who brought you Independence Day, the film utilizes amazing special effects to tell the story of a sudden climatic change that results in tornadoes in Los Angeles, tidal waves that take out the East Coast, the Eiffel Tower under ice. You'll just have to wait to see. Although the movie stretches credibility for dramatic impact, it is generating lots of renewed interest in global warming. A preview of the movie was held this past Monday at the American Museum of Natural History, which was surrounded by fake snow for the event. Meanwhile, a block away, MoveOn.org provided their spin. Al Gore said the movie was exciting, but beyond the message. While Laurie David, who is married to actor-writer Larry David, noted, "We all know one disaster film is worth 1,000 environmental speeches." Coming to a theater near you tomorrow. Cicadas continue to make news as billions and billions and billions, actually trillions of them, emerge from their underground nursery where they dined on tree roots for the last 17 years. However, in one of the most amazing mass matings by any animal species, the cicadas clamber to the surface and then spend the next 6 weeks hooked up with one another. The males do all the singing at damaging decibel levels to attract the females. They mate, the males continue their quest. It's a meat market out there, in more ways than one. The large insects provide sumptuous levels of protein to a whole series of critters, from birds to mice, squirrels, and frogs. This ritual is limited to a few eastern states. In some areas, their presence is overwhelming. The show continues through June. So if you miss this engagement, you'll have to wait 17 years for the next performance. A third snakehead fish was sighted in the Potomac River. This is causing great concern as the fish, which is native to China and Korea, pose a serious threat to our native ecosystems. The snakehead is a voracious predator and can decimate almost all other aquatic life in the rivers, ponds, and lakes they inhabit. The fish has the unusual ability to walk across short stretches of land, therefore spreading to lakes, lagoons, and ponds. If not stopped, the snakehead could have devastating consequences to eastern aquatic ecosystems. Calls are being made for a dramatic response to this non-native species, which would upset normal balance in water ecosystems. People are being asked to report any suspicious fish crossing a road. The first large wildfire of the season is burning in the New Mexico mountains. The Pippin Fire, which seemed contained this last weekend, reignited and now is spreading again. Ironically, this fire is burning in the same forest where Smokey the Bear was born. The badly singed cub was rescued by firefighters on May 9, 1950, and became one of the most successful forest prevention tools ever. There is a concern that this year could be another difficult forest season. We hear about endangered species and threatened ecosystems, but now we're hearing about endangered places, and perhaps even endangered feelings. The entire state of Vermont has been declared threatened by an unusual invader. The unique rural nature is under attack by an unusually high incidence of new Walmarts that threaten to destroy the nature of rural Vermont. Critics claim the Vermontians are getting a little too syrupy over the issue. And a final note, Tuesday night on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, a caller informed the 20 million listeners around the world that the caldera, which keeps Yellowstone so thermally active, was heating up, and there were areas being closed off to the public, and that roads were catching fires, and that if it were to go off, there would be 6 feet of molten magma covering 400 to 600 square miles. Well, I called my old friend Cheryl Matthews, the public affairs officer for Yellowstone. She was on the Wild Side News a few weeks ago talking about the Old Faithful Inn, and I ran this by her. She assured me that no areas are being closed, that no roads are on fire, that the caldera is not, I repeat, not bulging. So, if you're planning to visit the world's most amazing park, you can count on a great and exciting time in good old Yellowstone Park. And that's the news. And here's just a few reminders, and then we'll get on to our National Park of the Week. Next week, we'll be celebrating National Trails Day, which will kick off Saturday, June 5th, around the country. We will have some really special guests and hear from people doing things around the country. Join in this historic event and get ready to head out onto your favorite trails. If you like nature, you'll love the Wild Side News website. Anything you want to catch up on, news, go to our news page. There are links there to all the major nature-focused news outlets such as National Geographic, the Wilderness Society, Sierra Club, Orion Magazine, as well as all the major news sources, CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and even Fox. So please, if you want to contact me, go to the webpage, contact page, and send me an email. I love to hear from you. And send your notices of special events or sightings of wild creatures. The Wild Side News is growing every single show. Thanks for being part of this adventure. Well, let's take a look at this week's National Park of the Week. Michigan is divided into two separate parts. The northern part is called the Upper Peninsula. It borders onto the world's largest freshwater lake, Lake Superior. And this park is one that I personally find very interesting, not only because of what is there, but also who is there. Today, we're talking with Greg Bruff, the Chief of Interpretation at Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. Greg, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney. It's a pleasure to be here over the phone lines.
Well, great. I'm really happy that you can be as part of this show. Listen, I always like to find out, how's the weather up there?
Well, it's clouding up a little bit. We had some rain last night, and it's supposed to get a little chilly this evening in the 40s. And they're calling for frost freeze warnings for all of the early tomato growers.
This will all change by June 1st, and you'll be back in summer mode?
Yeah, it'll be 40, 45 degrees at night then. No, just teasing.
Listen, I this is an interesting park. To be honest, I'd never heard about the Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore. But from what I hear, this is kind of a Yellowstone of the Upper Peninsula. So tell us about the many features of this park.
Well, it's an amazing place, and that's probably why I've been here for over 16 years. And I compare it to like an old grandmother's quilt that somebody has pieced together, because Pictured Rocks Lakeshore is like a mosaic, both in terms of the natural realm and also because of the human history here. The natural resources in the park include 5 square miles of sand dunes that are just like Saudi Arabia in some respects.
I've seen pictures. It is really quite astonishing.
And we have upland hardwood forest of beech and maple and birch, as well as some wetland forests, cedar, white cedar and spruce tamarack forests, and so there's a lot going on here in terms of vegetation.
You also seem to have a rather wonderful, unique feature, which is a lighthouse. Tell us about that.
Yes, we do. We have actually two lighthouses in the park, but the main one that's open for visitors is the Ausable, spelled A-U-S-A-B-L-E. The Ausable Lighthouse is on the east end of the park, and it rises about 105 feet off of Lake Superior. And it's still an operating lighthouse, which was built in 1874. So it's a beautiful place, very remote location, and you go out there and you just step back into history.
Now, can people actually go into the lighthouse?
Yes, we tour through the summer, July and August. Usually about 5,000 people will join us on tours of the double keeper's quarters where two families lived, and then also we climb up into the tower so we can see Lake Superior and off in the distance the Grand Sable banks and dunes that I spoke of earlier.
You know, now the term Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore is a little misleading. I envision a lakeshore, okay? I see sort of people swimming. But it's actually a 77,000 square acre park. That's a lot of land, and you talked about some of the natural features there, but you also have freshwater lakes, and so people can fish there as well.
We do indeed. In addition to Lake Superior, like you mentioned, the largest freshwater lake on Earth, we have several small inland lakes, many, many streams that flow kind of precipitously into Lake Superior, in addition with the wetlands that are kind of connecting all of these things together.
Now, can people actually take watercraft down into these lakes?
Canoes and small fishing boats are the primary way that people use them, huh?
Okay, and how about camping?
We have three vehicle-oriented campgrounds in the park. One in the middle of the park, two over on the eastern end. And most of the campsites are right next to either an inland lake or Lake Superior. So you look out your campsite door, and there's Lake Superior off in the distance. It's really beautiful.
Now, people who are listening to the show can obviously go to the website, and I have links there to the park so that people can actually see some of the pictures and to get to know more about the park. Why don't you give us the website so that people who want to can go there easily?
Sure. www.nps.gov/PIRO. And then also, if you want to look at the Park of the Week page, instead of typing in PIRO, just type in Park of the Week, and that'll bring you up to the page that triggered this phone conversation.
Yeah, great. You know, it's kind of interesting. You and I actually share some common history. We worked in similar parks. I worked in Minnesota at St. Croix State Park, and you actually spent some time doing special adventures there. So I'm really familiar with that area. This time of the year is extraordinary. And why don't you tell people what they can see, particularly as the wildflowers come out in the spring and early summer?
Well, it's the best time for wildflowers and also warblers. The wildflowers in the woods right now include the white anemone, bloodroot, the yellow marsh marigold. Pretty soon we'll have orchids popping up in the forest. And so before the trees really, really come out, and here the leaves on the trees are only about the size of a teaspoon. And so we get a lot of light onto the forest floor, and that's when all of the main flowers bloom in the spring. So it's a
when you have a shortened growing season like that, it's really amazing because the wildflowers and they just literally explode into being. And at any particular time, there's probably 30 common wildflowers that you'd be able to go out and easily identify with a field guide. It's really quite exciting.
It is indeed. And speaking of field guides, the birds have arrived from Central and South America, and so this is the warbler time of the year, not only for the warblers who nest and raise their young here, but also for the ones that are continuing north into Canada, which is, as I'm sitting here in my office, behind my back, about 160 miles over Lake Superior to Canada.
Wow. You mentioned, I think, that there's about 350 species. That's a lot.
It is. We don't necessarily know that all of them are here. We anticipate about 225 bird species should be here. We know that 175 or so are here for sure.
Greg, two things. One, and we'll make this quick, how do people get there? Because I know you can enter from Wisconsin, but how about from the other side?
Well, you can come in through Canada over at Sault Ste. Marie. You can come in through the Western Upper Peninsula over near Ironwood. Green Bay is a popular access point to the Upper Peninsula in Wisconsin, and then across the Mackinac Bridge to the lower portion of Michigan as well.
Great. Look on a map. You'll see where this is. Now, one other thing, too. You also have quite an interest in art, and you have done some things that relate to art in the parks. Tell us about that and make an invitation to people to participate.
Well, we do have a current artist-in-residence program. Each year, we host one person for about a month, up to a month, and we provide them with a place to live, and in return for that, they give us back one piece of artwork that they've created. And so take a look at our website, and you'll see the artist-in-residence. If you dig deep in the website, it's there.
Thanks, Greg. We've been talking with Greg Bruff here on the Wild Side News, the worldwide leader in Internet talk.